recorder.
Yeah.
And but I also bought Louis Theroux the collection, and when I went to get that one, I watched that, I thought, I should have watched the collection, because that's a proper DVD, so I'd be better picture and all that. So I put that on today, because I wanted to make notes for this show. And it ran an hour. And so they cut out a quarter of the programme.
Hmm.
And there were lots of bits cut out, from what aired. So, and this is the only, you know, if you were going to go and buy the DVD, this is the only way you can get it. You can't seem to get the full version. So what I've done is I've made notes on different things to go through. And then when I get to the end of that and I suddenly realised it ran less than the hour, it ran an hour, I put the other one back in and I found out what was taken out. Some of the bits probably, you know, you remember when you kept on about you wanted to stay in your house and things like that?
Yeah, oh yeah, uh-huh.
That's all cut out of the DVD.
Well, I would probably a third of the good stuff was cut out, even before that, because they edit everything, and you know, it shows you the honesty of these people.
No, I completely agree.
Of course, they can't. Of course, they can't run everything, or it'd be 10 hours long. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but the way that they do it is that all the way through. My reflection on it is it's not so much a program, if people watch it from our perspective, it's not so much a program about you as a program about the media and him and Jewish sort of ideals and the way he tried to get involved in the, you when you were doing your job with the television,
right,
with that guy. And he automatically trying to create a problem between you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
But and that's what they do.
Oh, yeah. Well, they, you know, that's that gotcha type news. Gotcha, gotcha.
I always call it ambush journalism. And I've always said to people, and that's why, funny enough, before I spoke to John DeNugent, because, I mean, I appreciate you don't like David Duke at all. And, you know, from what you've said, I can understand that. But I sort of, you were talking about what to discuss and what not to, and I said, well, I've tried to avoid, like, personal attacks on people because I just, my only concern is, and I, you know, I trust you and that, Tom, but obviously if they then come to me and I've got no evidence to back it up, whereas you have, do you see what I mean?
Sure. No, I don't.
You haven't?
No, I don't expect you to jump on my bandwagon. I just say what I think, and if anybody wants to use it, fine. If they don't, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, to be quite honest with you, I think it's interesting, really, because do you know the website, The Daily Stormer?
Yes, and here again, I have no use for that either, because it's the same cliches, same old World War II propaganda crap that, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't do us any good.
No, I understand. I think, obviously, the reason it's become popular is that it's told in a satirical manner. You know, he's got quite a good sense of humor, some of the stuff,
yeah,
he puts in there.
Yeah,
and
the,
it's
the right wing, the young guys, they love it. They always gravitate to that stuff. And I found out, and I hope other people have found out over the years, that there's a hell of a lot more to the struggle than that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't know if you saw it, but John DeNugent did an article before he came on to do the show, and he said Daily Stormer is fun, but it's for neophytes. Neophytes, like new people, there's a lot more in it than that.
Yeah. Well, that's all still part of the right wing, and I just don't give them much time. I mean, I'm not interested in them anymore, whether it's that one or even DeNugent's a right winger, so, I mean, you know, he does his thing.
Yeah, he's kind of, I don't know, I mean, you've got the most unique sort of perspective on things, because you're the only racialist that I'm aware of that doesn't go down the right wing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that gives you a great perspective, and obviously all your history and your background.
Well, all these guys have I forget what you would say, they have
Agenda?
They have an agenda, and they've had a checkered past, and I won't go into it with Nugent. He's sort of a, even in the right wing, he's sort of, I don't know. He's got, you know, the one guy that came over here and stayed at his house was from Germany, and they were looking for him, and allegedly Nugent turned him over. But anyhow, there's, here again, I just like to stay away from it because the whole right wing has got people in it that have checkered backgrounds. Some are worse than others.
Yeah. No, I know. It's difficult because...
Well, they're all competing for this right-wing leadership type thing and all trying to outdo each other all the time. And so it becomes a little suspect after a while. I feel I just feel much better being separated from them.
Well, what I find is there's a lot of infighting. For example, there's another guy called Kyle Hunt who does a website and a radio thing called Renegade Tribune and Renegade Broadcasting. I don't know if you've ever seen those.
I've heard all the stuff I've heard of and maybe looked in on it for a few minutes, but...
Well, he did the documentary of Hellstorm, you know, the book Hellstorm about the firebombing on Dresden, etc.
Yeah.
And he did the DVD of that, and he's I've watched the DVD, he sent me a copy, and he got different people to do voices for the film, and one of them was John DeNugent, and I was interviewing John the same day, well, last Thursday, I think, that I was interviewing this Carl Hunt. I had him on a couple of hours before, and, you know, so I sort of mentioned, oh, you know, and I've got Carl Hunt, I've got to interview him later, and he's like, oh. And apparently there's now a problem between them.
Oh, that's the whole story of the right wing.
Yeah. You see what I mean? And I think a lot of people, I've sent out, I pretty much got all the emails out. What I did before I started, Tom, was I went through, you know, my mind, then I looked at other people's sites, people that I'd looked at before, saw the people they interviewed. Oh, yeah, I'd like to interview this person, not that one. This, and I've built up a little list, you know, and I've gradually been going through. And quite a few people, they just do not email me back at all. And you just don't hear, and you kind of, you know that these days, if someone doesn't get an email, you get a, you know, you get a sort of unsent email come back. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And people, a lot of them, they just seem to just ignore you. They don't say, oh, I don't want to be on, who want to be on, and you just think, you don't know where you stand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like I say, you're going through all the weeds in the right wing is. Without, you don't have a roadmap for the right wing.
I understand. No, it's,
you got to know the personality. You know, I go for the personality first, and then what he's saying second. I want to know about a man's. You know, does he have a family? Has he ever been arrested on felony charges, or child molestation, or whatever it may be, and all that kind of stuff? I want to know about the person that I'm expected to listen to before I even listen to him, because we got a lot of moral rats that are posing as national socialists and right wingers and everything else, and they're trying to tell everybody else how to solve the white people's problem.
Well, I mean, and you find that in identity as well. You know, people have gone into identity and they've been child molesters. And then you might have even heard of that guy, August Christ.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I saw the story, because there was that other guy from National Alliance a few years ago. And I think that those charges were overturned. They tend to be bogus charges. I forget his name.
Three names,
hasn't he? You know what I mean? It's like my name, actually.
Yeah, he is an excellent writer, but not so good. Not so good moral. I tend to believe that those charges were correct. The people that assume the system 24 hours a day is just waiting to bring false charges against us is not true. They do it, but not all the time. But the right wing tend to say every time a right winger is charged with a crime, oh, he's innocent. The Jews set him up.
Yeah.
And that, I forget his name. I know him. I met him years ago. And he's an excellent writer, but I tend to believe where there's smoke, there's fire in that case. I think he did plead guilty on something, but anyhow, I had long ago pretty much separated myself from National Alliance, so I didn't pay too much attention to it.
Oh, I think I've got him, Kevin Alfred Strong.
That's right, right. Yeah. Kevin, he's an excellent writer, and I liked a lot of his stuff, but National Alliance had, you know, others like that, even Pierce. These people were a little strange sexually and all that kind of stuff. Pierce used to marry these women from Eastern Europe. I think he married about two or three and brought them over here, and they're... I remember being at one testimonial dinner for Pearson. He had this one Eastern European woman there, and she didn't say a damn word. I don't know whether she didn't speak English or what. She was just like a model in a store window sitting there. there's a lot of porno going on inside the right wing. There's a lot of sexual questions and... early on, sexual questions about an arrest that was made up in the northeast of Pearson and one of the other guys, and alleged sexual situation. You know, over the years, you get bits and pieces of all this. In fact, my friend Rick Cooper was writing a letter on the extreme homosexual content in the right wing. And... he asked me if I had any information. I said, well, I don't have actual evidence. I've heard rumors here and rumors there, but I can't use that. But he never finished the book. He's dead now. But believe me, a lot of the people the right wing look up to and worship don't deserve it.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember seeing some YouTube, and it was actually Rockwell, and he was being interviewed by someone, and they asked about homosexuality. He says, yeah, we've had homosexuals in, and they turn their back on that, and they change.
Well, at least Rockwell was out in the open. I mean, he was honest about it, that he would allow a homosexual in his organization if they changed their ways and like that. I mean, you know, I can understand that, but I'm talking about undercover homosexual activity, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird shit, and I know that with David Duke it runs pretty deep. But he was working with Dr. James K. Warner, who ran a Christian identity program, and he was living in North Hollywood, California. That's where I met David Duke. And he is a homosexual and a bisexual. Everybody knew it.
Warner,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so Duke really went into business with Warner, knowing he was a homosexual, and Duke took him down there to Louisiana, and they were in business for a while, and then they sort of split up. But when Duke was up in North Hollywood, the word got back to me that Warner took him around to all the gay clubs in North Hollywood. So I think Duke is possibly bisexual, but I don't have obviously any proof.
No, I understand.
But
okay. Well, do you want to...
Anyhow, it's a sordid, sick affair in the right wing. I got to tell you that. And you may think I'm overcritical, but I've been around this thing so long that you find out a lot about people.
Well, you know, that was what... There was something... Because I'd seen you, you know, obviously on this documentary before, and something stuck with me, because this kind of came out as I was finding out this stuff. I mean, I didn't bring my book out until 2006, and this was 2003. And I always used to like watching Theroux and that, because he had that quirky sort of manner.
Yeah.
And now I see the side of him. But I've pretty much watched, and even now, to be quite honest, what he started doing these days is he started doing stuff on American prisons and things like that. And so I can watch that without there being some undercurrent of, you know, trying to push liberalism or what have you.
Sure.
But there was something about it when I saw, and I think I heard a show of yours years ago, and someone made some comment or they sent something in, and you said, oh, I didn't think I came across that well. And I'd heard that, and I saw the documentary. I thought, no, Tom actually came across really well. But I kind of didn't know why at the time, because I knew that there was, at that point, I was really in the David Icke camp of thinking there's an Illuminati, but not realising any racial thing, like it was Jews or
right,
or how they manipulate the media or anything like that. So, you know, going back that far, and it was weird watching it again, because I saw it on Friday, and then I thought, I want to watch it today so I can really do a show on it with you.
Sure.
And if you don't get through it this show, then we can run it over to another one when you're next free, and talk about anything
whenever,
else you'd like.
Whatever, no problem.
Good stuff. Well, okay, are you ready to go? Do you need to get a drink of water, or are you okay, or...?
No, it's too early for a drink of scotch, so I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
I can have a beer earlier than you, because it's 2:18 here. So
I used to drink moderately. I've slowed way down because I've gotten to where I take more vitamins than I do drink.
Yeah, I've been taking one of those Centrum vitamins, the multivitamin. I've been taking it for like over 20 years now.
Yeah.
And I don't get ill that often, but because it's a mainstream thing, you don't know is that the popular one.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's just a placebo or if it is doing something.
Well, I take like 7 or 8,000 milligrams of C a day, stuff like that, twice a day. I'm into, more mass vitamin. If you take the right thing, because low doses really don't do you that much good, especially if you've got some sickness or disease. I don't take it because, well, I'm supposed to have a thyroid, low-functioning thyroid, but I don't, they've been treating me for that for years, and I can't tell any difference in the stuff they give me. So I'd rather take big doses of vitamin C, and I'm feeling much better that way.
It
shows itself. I get tired, and that was the problem with the alleged thyroid problem. I get about noon, I get to go into a slump, and I have to take caffeine pill, doing the show. But now I don't have to do that. I'm taking big doses of vitamin C, and also I eat a lot of walnuts for memory and so forth, some other stuff I take, so.
I might try that, because the biggest problem I have with the shows is when I try and think of a word or something, and I can't think of it, and then I get really panicky inside, because I'm like, I'm doing this show, and I can't think of the word to say.
Oh, hell, that happens to me every time I do a show.
You know what I mean?
Eat a handful of walnuts every morning.
Yeah,
shelled walnuts. They help me. I remember a lot better taking walnuts.
Excellent. Well, I'll give that a go. But if you're ready, I'll count us in, and then we'll record.
I'm always ready, Teddy.
Excellent. Thanks, Tom. Right, I'll count us in. 3, 2, 1, record. So 3, 2, 1, record.
Listening to the Europa Radio Network, and this is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. Back in 2003, I'd only really started, getting into what I do now, my beliefs, the research that I did. I was putting the book together probably about a year after that as a timeline. That's how it started, just as a just for my own use. But I think I was probably still in the David Icke camp at that point. And I used to still watch mainstream television. And I saw a program. I used to watch a guy called Louis Theroux. And he did a series of programs called Weird Weekends, which he'd go and visit different American subcultures. He did a program on the wrestling industry. And he went over and did programs on religious cults and all different sorts of things. I used to find them quite interesting. Now, a programme that he did in 2003 was called Louis and the Nazis, and he had pretty much, it was a special, and it was 80 minutes rather than the usual, which was about less than an hour. And it was pretty much most of it all on Tom Metzger. And, you know, Tom's been on a couple of times with me. He's a great guest. And I watched this documentary 3 or 4 days ago, and I watched it again today, and I found out that the DVD that you can get of it, which is on, it's called Louis Theroux, The Collection. You have to buy a set to get it. But that's been cut to 60 minutes. But there's the full version. If you just type in Louis and the Nazis into YouTube, and I tried one that didn't work in the UK. It said that it doesn't work in your country due to copyright. I sent the link to Tom, and it worked for him in America. And then I found another one that did work in the UK. So the best thing you can do is just type Louis and the Nazis YouTube, and you can watch the program that I'm going to be discussing today with Tom. So I'm going to bring him up now. Tom, are you with me?
Good morning. Good morning.
Excellent. It's great having you back. How have you been?
Oh, I've been fine. I'm feeling great. It's a... We're finally getting summer over here. It's been, we've had a lot of rain, and it's been cool. It was a week ago, it got down to 34 degrees. I mean, you know, that's, by now it should be 80, but it's supposed to get 80 pretty soon. So I've got my shorts on. I got my shorts on and out there doing it.
Excellent. I mean, we've been told a similar thing, that we're facing a potential heat wave in London like we haven't seen for years, and it'll be about another week. We keep, the weather keeps going up and down. You don't know whether to wear a T-shirt or wear a jacket over that or whatever. You know, it's strange. And then suddenly you get this torrential rain out of nowhere. So, yeah, there's weird things happening with the weather as well.
Yeah, we were getting rain every other day. It was raining like hell. I mean, you know, it, we're not used to that back here. We're used to periodic rain, but not that much.
Yeah.
And my grass grew to about a foot tall in about a week. And I almost ruined my mower trying to mow it.
I heard on one of your recent shows you bought a secondhand tractor. Is that what you bought that for?
Yes, I did. And I'm working on it because I got one little problem with it. But yeah, I had a tractor before, but I thought it was causing my back a little trouble riding around on the rough ground. But this one so far, no problem.
That's good. And while we're on that subject, because we've never really gone into this, but can you give the listeners your website and the shows that you do where people can go and subscribe?
Yes, we're at resist.com, just simply resist.com. That's our giant website, and people can write me at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana. That's Warsaw, like Poland, Indiana, 46581. Just address it to Tom Metzger, or just occupant if you want.
And excellent.
People can subscribe to my radio show, and there's a donation involved. However, we have hundreds of radio shows in our archives. They can go to resist.com and download them free.
Yeah, that's excellent. And okay, well, if we jump into this this documentary, we're going back. Well, the broadcast was, 13 years ago. I don't know if it was recorded much in advance of it being broadcast. Did you actually get given a video of it by the BBC or anything, or did you have to wait for it to come on television? Or?
I think I did have to wait for it to come on television. I don't remember them giving me anything but a bunch of crap.
and what did they pay you for it out of interest?
I'm trying to remember whether he paid for that or not. A lot of them I got paid for, appearing on some of the big television shows, but I don't remember whether I charged him for that or not. If I didn't, I should have. I kicked myself in the butt for not. Well, if I did charge him, it would have been maybe 500, maybe max 1,000, but I don't think I ever charged him.
No, that's interesting. Right, well, what I did was literally a few hours ago, I sat down and I looked at the 60-minute version, and I didn't realise it was 60 minutes until I watched it, and then I looked at the full version, which was on the, you know, the video copy, to sort of see if there was any interesting bits that they had deliberately cut out for the DVD release, because that's the only one commercially available, and they're not going to be repeating, unlikely to be, they don't tend to repeat documentaries like that. Things might have changed with all these new channels that we get now, but certainly in the past they didn't seem to. So if you didn't get it originally, this is the only one that you can buy commercially, the cut one. But firstly, the feeling I got was that your partner at the time, Mary, I believe you're together now.
Yes,
correct?
Yes.
She seemed to me to be uncomfortable around Theroux.
Oh, yes, she was. She didn't like him at all. Women have this sixth sense. My first wife had that sense. She could, if I wanted, I'd ask her opinion about somebody that newly acquainted with, and she usually was right about the person. They're more perceptive, women. That's why I would prefer having almost all women in any security force, in intelligence, because they're much better at it. And so, you know, the Germans used Jewish prostitutes in France. All of their agents in France were Jew prostitutes.
It's interesting. A
woman can get things out of a man that a man never could.
Well, that guy that they, you know, that whistleblower from Dimona in where the Jews have got all their nuclear weapons in Israel.
Yes.
That guy who, he came over to the UK and released a story to Robert Maxwell, who was a Jew, to his newspaper, and they actually got him via a Jewish female agent called Cindy, who seduced him, and then they drugged him and they got him back to Israel.
That happens all the time. It's all the time. In fact, we've got friends of ours in prison now because a woman set him up, and they fall for it, and what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just typing in his...
I think every place I went where some person paid for me to go someplace and give a speech or something, non-racial even, almost every time they tried to introduce me to a woman.
Yeah, and the thing here, and what I found myself doing with this documentary... It's more interesting to watch it from the point of view of Theroux. Now, when you look at his Wikipedia and stuff, he's got all this different ancestry, but he doesn't say that he's Jewish, but he got very close in this program. Do you believe that he's Jewish or not?
I don't really know. I would bet that he may be, but I have no absolute proof one way or the other. I don't... you know, you don't have to be a Jew to be a bastard, you know that?
No. All I'm saying is there's so many references in the program, and there was a part where, obviously, the we'll get to it, but where he goes to check out the guys that you're doing the rally with, who invited you to that rally skit.
He sure didn't want to go into it,
no.
Which makes me think that he probably is. I mean, why wouldn't he say, oh, yeah, I'm Jewish? I mean, you know.
One or the other. Why did he? What annoyed me is he wants information out of everybody else, but he doesn't want to volunteer any of his own.
That's true.
And I mean, with that in mind, folks, as I say, this is the way I saw the documentary. That was more about him. So if he's not Jewish, it's about him as a liberal, and it's about how liberals behave. And the next bit, you know, so I'm going through it in chronological order. He showed Mary one of your CDs with a black being lynched on the front cover and asked her if she considered it was acceptable. And, I mean, this is the strategy that he does. He gets two people together. You and Mary, you're in love, and he immediately tries to drive a wedge between the two of you. What's it got to do with her?
Right.
Sickness you've got. Why does he need her opinion on what you do, other than to cause trouble?
That's right, because she's an individual. She has her opinion one way or the other, and that's her business. I mean, she's not going to, unless she was a flaming crazy person, she's not going to say, oh, that's wonderful, they're hanging the nigger. I mean, we don't talk like that. We never talk like that.
Exactly, and so, you know, he knew the reaction that he was going to get, and she addressed it brilliantly. She said, well, yeah, these things do happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, addressed it at the period of history, and he couldn't take it anywhere, so she gave such a good response.
She's a very sharp lady.
Yeah, and she came across that way. And as I say, I'm pleased that I was right in my interpretation that she seemed uncomfortable around him all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
And then your youngest daughter turned up, and he asked if she would be prepared to date a Jew in front of you.
Yes, right.
And, you know, and she was, you know, a bit sort of perplexed by the question. She said, well, it's not really something I've thought about. And this is the sort of, I call it ambush journalism, and I always say to people, and I've actually invited, like, David Icke onto this show, and, of course, I've got completely different opinions from David Icke, and I've not had a response, and he's does shows on the BBC and stuff, so, you know, he may well think, well, why would I want to be on this little show, you know? But I've always said that I don't do ambush journalism, and if people listen to my shows, I've been criticised for not criticising guests or what have you, but I invite guests on to get to gauge them, to get them to speak. People know what my opinions are if they've heard me on radio, if they've read my books, what have you. There's no point inviting a guest on just to be fodder for my comments. I want to get their views out, and then people might, everyone's always going to agree with some of what a guest says. They're not going to disagree with it all, because I'd never invite someone completely polar opposite to myself. But this is clearly what he's doing here, and it was funny because there was that bit where you didn't lose your temper, but you were forceful, and he was sat in the room where it was like your study, and
right.
Mary and your daughter were in the doorway, and he started talking about, you were saying about blacks and that, and he kept saying, it's bull, and you said, you said to him, do you know black crime statistics from the UK? Have you read that? Because I read it. And he just sat there, and he didn't say anything, and he started drinking his drink.
Yeah.
And it was the thing. It's this classic liberal thing. Oh, that's rubbish. Oh, that's rubbish. Well, how about the statistics then? And then they've got no answer to it. But blacks do commit a vast amount of crime compared to whites.
Well, like this morning I heard on the radio that back in the 70s they were promoting the idea that 10% of the American population were homosexual. Well, after all these years, they've done some more research on that, and they found out less than 1% were homosexual. And on the transgendered, they found out that whatever, they're amplifying the numbers of what do you call them? I forget. Yeah, but anyhow.
Freaks.
Yeah, well, they said that they have a lot more of those than they actually do. They're very teeny, tiny, teeny .00001 of the population. But yet they want to open up the bathrooms to everybody over here now, change the whole country around just so we don't offend these people. Well, I don't give a shit. I offend a lot of people. In fact, I enjoy offending a lot of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, if you've got a point to make, it's not down to you whether they're, you know, it's down to what you say. And if what you say you can back up with fact, if someone's offended by it, that's their problem, not yours.
That's right. That's right. This idea of not offending anybody is crazy. It's correct speech and all that. That's the thing to throw out. I mean, that's one thing that makes me more free than most people. I've always said exactly what I believe at the time, and I don't care who likes it or don't like it. And I believe that's the mark of a real free man. I don't think most people are free because they couch their words and they beat around the bush and they don't answer yes or no. I listen to a lot of these right-wing leaders even get on there. Are you a racist? Well, it depends on what you call racist, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so I believe in being straight out. And I get actually more respect for my enemy than most of these people do because they disagree, of course, very much with me on my positions, but they know I'm honest about it.
Yeah, and a guy that's going to come up in this, because he also featured prominently, and this was a guy called John Malpaisi, who was a... Does he still fit into your life? Is he still around?
No, John was an interesting character in my life. It started with me doing some television work for his father, who was a retired federal judge from Los Angeles and owned a lot of property in the town I lived in, Fallbrook, California, and we became good friends. Well, his son was John Malpaisi. He moved down to take care of his mother. And in going over there to do work for the old man, I became acquainted with John. John was an alcoholic, an extreme alcoholic. I tried to befriend him and help him out a little bit, and so we did become friends. He had bad hips and stuff like that, and I got him with a deal where he could get new hips and all that kind of stuff, and I tried to help the guy. I loaned him a couple of cars. He rolled them, wrecked them and stuff. But he was supposed to manage and promote me, and because he knew a lot of people in Hollywood. He knew a lot of stars and everybody else, but I kept him around too long. I finally broke with him, but he was never one of my close people. He was not even involved in White Aryan Resistance. He was just a friend of mine. And he'd been in a lot of trouble with drugs early on and so forth like that. He knew Escobar. He was big time back in the 80s, and he almost went to federal prison, but he beat it. But he wasn't in drugs when I knew him, but anyhow, he... So that was perfect. That was perfect for Louis to get a hold of John and talk to him because John was not that racial.
But is John still around, or are you not aware of him?
He's still around. It's up until about a year ago, I used to talk to him about once a month, but I haven't talked to him since. So I assume he's got his law license back and is practicing in L.A.
Yeah. Okay.
But for Louis to get a hold of him was dragging a sort of a bad thing across the trail because of his background and so forth.
Yeah, and I mean, then there's a part of the show that you're not in, and this is when Theroux meets the family of a guy called Skip, who's basically, his part in the show is he's set up a rally, and he's requested that you go to that rally. And so what Theroux did was he wanted to meet the people that were holding the rally before it actually took place. So he goes over there on his own, and there he finds out all about them, and he's invited into their home. They're playing pool. There's a load of them, brothers, etc. And these are strong Nazi people. They've got the tattoos and what have you. And they are welcoming to him, but then they smell a rat, and he's got all the information out of them, and then they ask him if he's Jewish, and he simply refuses to confirm or deny it. He just refuses. He says, I'm not going to say, I don't know why we're talking about that. Well, obviously, if you've got a Nazi rally, then the way Nazis are portrayed is that they want to kill the Jews. So surely if he's a Jew or not would be the most important thing that any reasonable researcher would recognise. But what, again, he's doing is he's trying to get all the information out of them but not volunteer anything to them, which from their perspective is going to be extremely important information as to whether they allow their sworn enemy into their house to mingle with their family.
Of course, and those same Jewish elements would like to kill us.
Exactly. And then he refers to himself when we get to the, we move on to you're going to the rally with Theroux. And he gets to the rally, and it's quite funny, because he goes, oh, does anyone want to have pictures with Tom? You know, we're doing this documentary, and people, no one speaks to him. Yeah. You know, they just look at him and walk off, and you kind of say, look, I've got to go over here now, and you get rid of him too. And he makes some comment, firstly, which is laughable. He says, Theroux refers to himself as a member of the so-called Jewish-run media. This is on the voiceover now. So he says, oh, because I'm part of the so-called Jewish-run media. Well, there's countless stories written by Jews out there that admit that they run the media and they're happy with it.
Sure.
So, again, it's more lies from him. And then it was funny. He says towards the end, oh, I felt like a child left out at a school party or something because no one would talk to me.
Did you ever read the book, An Empire of Their Own? It's a book you should. It's about their control of Hollywood, and they're bragging all. It's a 300-400-page book. They're all bragging about how they control Hollywood.
Well, there's Joel Stein, a famous Joel. If you put the Jews control the media and put Joel Stein in, he wrote this article, and he basically goes through everything and says, yeah, and I'm a Jew, and I'm pleased with it that we control it all. So, again, it's more lies. They make canards out of it. They, oh, everyone says the Jews run the media. I mean, how silly. And so then he'll throw it into that.
Well, you know what? Wait a minute. You know why they get away with it? Because the Christian whites run interference for them. If the Christian whites and other whites didn't run interference for these Jews, they couldn't get away with it. But that's
interference.
Yeah, every place. I mean, anything that happens, you can't even say the word Jew. I mean, you know, you got to say Jewish because who jumps on your back? White Christians and liberals and so forth, and they're always running interference for them. The Jews are given all this power by our people.
That's very true. And I mean, if I said American, I said Englishman, I said Italian, Jew is merely the same term. It's a person of a race. But they've turned the word Jew into having the same connotation as the word nigger for a black person.
Well,
they've actually made it into an offensive word so people can't say it.
But nigger is really descriptive of a black person. Jew is not very descriptive of a Jew because Jews come in all races, all colors, all religions and all that kind of stuff. So you can't pin them down. I know when the head of the Anti-Defamation League, I believe it was interrogated for a court trial in New York City by the, I forget who that guy was that was going after him. But anyhow, he asked the head of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, give me your definition of a Jew, and he wouldn't do it. He couldn't do it. Because it's just not. You got Orthodox Jews, Reformed Jews, atheist Jews. You got, and most of them are not of a race at all. I mean, they're of different races. They marry into all the races. That's the danger of the Jew, with the Jew mindset. And then you got, you know, I keep saying, well, if you're a Jew, if you're a Baptist, you can quit being a Baptist. If you're a Catholic, you can quit being a Catholic. Why can't you quit being a Jew?
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, when they marry into all these races, they still identify themselves as Jews. That's the interesting part.
Because it serves their interest, and if it didn't serve their interest, they wouldn't do it. They use actually their Jewish, so-called Jewishness as a cover to commit crimes. I mean, you know,
yeah.
if they're living in an area where people are wise about how a lot of the Jews act, and put a lot of pressure on them, they shut their mouth and don't talk about it, you know, or tend to join the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church or something like that to cover their ass like they did in Spain.
Yeah. I mean, an interesting point here, because this is when Theroux and John were talking before they picked you up to go to Mexico, John said that you always worried about getting kidnapped in Mexico. And then Theroux says later on in a voiceover that this is a fantasy of your self-importance. So all the way through, he's trying to criticize
you. Well, let me give you some evidence about that. many years ago, I was quite interested in developing the idea of a ship offshore off California, like you did in England there, where you had your private radio station on a ship, a pirate station.
Radio Jackie, yeah, Radio Jackie.
Well, I liked that, and I was working towards something like that, and I was contacted by a guy in Mexico that supposedly had those used old ships and stuff, and he wanted me to come down to Mexico to talk it over, and I said, well, no, you're going to have to come to San Diego to talk it over with me, and he never came. So they were obviously, it was pretty obvious they were trying to get me into Mexico. So I'm not trying to make myself self-important. I'm just seeing what happens. You know, people have shot at me. I've had contracts on my life, and this is all a matter of record. So the fact that they might have wanted to get me into Mexico for nefarious reasons is very believable, especially since the guy wouldn't come to San Diego to talk over an issue he could have made quite a bit of money on. Now, I don't have conclusive proof that he was doing that for that reason, but I wasn't going to take the chance. And I don't think that has to do with my overestimation of my worth.
No, exactly. And this is my whole point. He must have spoken to you about that and known why you were worried about being kidnapped.
Yes, I'm sure he did, yeah.
But he chose not to put that in there.
No.
Just chose to make out that, oh, Tom thinks he's brilliant. Tom thinks he's going to get kidnapped. Isn't he an idiot? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah. There's a whole lot of stuff, good stuff, that was cut out of that documentary. Not just the stuff that 15 minutes you're talking about. That there's a whole lot of great stuff in that filming that if it was in there, it would turn the whole thing around.
Well, I mean, we can certainly... as I say, if we don't get through everything that you want to say about it and everything that I've noted down on this show, we can carry it forward to another show so we make sure we get everything out that you want to say about it. I just want to make a correction, folks. It wasn't Radio Jackie that was broadcast off a boat. It was Radio Caroline. That was the one in the UK that was broadcast off a boat. Now, we go over to Mexico now. Let me see.
That was suggested by John Malpaisi. He knew people down in Mexico. He wanted to go see somebody down there, so they decided, oh, yeah, let's go to Mexico. And wasn't my idea at all. And so we went to Mexico, and he contacted the people he was looking for, and I had a few drinks. I had too many drinks, and I'm not used to tequila.
Well, it's funny because this is the next bit I'm going to get to. I put, because on the trip to Mexico, you had a few drinks, although you don't look drunk to me, quite honestly. I've had people in the back of my car that I've had to pull over because they're throwing up. I had to help people to their door, all sorts of stuff. You got out of the car unaided. You still spoke in the car unaided. And then John stepped in because you were tired and you were there, like almost falling asleep. It had been a long day.
Right.
And Louis saying, no, let Tom answer, let Tom answer. And John says, no, I'm not going to let him answer. He's tired because, again, Theroux's there driving. He's not had anything to drink. He's completely alert. And he's all the time trying to ambush you. Or maybe Tom's a bit drunk. Maybe I can get him to say something, you know, that I can use against him. It's this Jew mindset of always trying to undermine people.
Let me tell you a funny one on Louis. They were also, one of the reasons they wanted to go down there, they wanted to go down and shoot some video in the red light district of Tijuana where all the prostitutes were. And so that was sort of a side trip. So anyhow, we get down there and we find the street. And the cameraman is shooting away, going down the street at these prostitutes on the street and everything, and the cops stopped us. And no, you can't take any pictures on this street. And the cops wanted to get a hold of the videotape, and they were going to haul Louis away to jail. And so the guy gave him a cartridge from his camera, and they let us go. But the guy gave him a blank tape. He still had the tape. But anyhow, Louis's eyes got as big as grapefruit, man. He thought he was going to a Mexican jail.
Excellent. Well, I mean, in this bit here, Farou says, again on the voiceover, about you having a few drinks.
Sure.
I had to keep reminding myself I was with one of the most dangerous racists in America. And the way he says it, it's as if to say racists shouldn't drink. Well, let's be quite honest, folks. I mean, Klan rallies and things. I've heard of Klan rallies where they've gone and set up a cross and it's just rolled down the hill on fire because they've been so drunk trying to put it together. There is a lot of heavy drinking in, I mean, I've spoken about in the past where I've drunk too much and what have you. And there is a lot of that in the right wing. There's a lot of it in liberal terms. There's a lot of it everywhere. Okay, so it's not restricted to anything. What this guy's trying to say is that, you know, anybody who goes to have a few drinks, so say, for example, if I was a, you know, back to being a police officer, and I used to have a few drinks, most police officers I knew did. Does that mean that I can't be regarded as a serious police officer because when I'm not working, I have a few drinks?
I think that was the most drinks I've had in years was in Mexico that day, because John Malpaisi kept pumping me with, every time I'd finish a drink, he'd throw another one in front of me. And as tequila, and I'm not used to drinking tequila, but normally I have about four cocktails a week, you know, usually on the weekend. But trying to say that I'm some kind of an alcoholic is ridiculous. You can ask anybody around this town and they'll say that's a laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And now we get on to, and this I found really offensive from Louis Theroux here. He questions your commitment to the racial cause by accusing you of inconsistency, which he means hypocrisy. And actually, that was part that was cut out, and he did say that later, so we'll go into that later. The reason he says this is that he films you visiting one of your clients on your, you know, your work business, which was then repairing television sets. And the client said himself that you're the best TV engineer in the area, and everybody knows it. So you go over there, he's filming you with this client of your TV repair business, and Theroux asks the client where he's from, and the client says he's from Peru. Now, you've known each other for over 10 years, and Theroux's aware of this. So Theroux then tries to cause conflict between the two of you at this guy's home by bringing up your politics. And when you reply to his question saying that association is not friendship, he starts talking over you as he knows he can't win the argument. And it was just appalling. He kept trying to say that, I mean, I've said this before to like identity people. I said, if you want to follow all the trouble with following the 759 laws, whatever, in the Bible, is that by following one, it says that you should work, for example. I mean, I know you'll be familiar with this, Tom, because you used to be a pastor within it. So it says that all men should work, okay? But then it says that we shouldn't associate with these non-whites, etc. Yeah. But if I went to get a job here, and I don't remember a place that I've ever actually worked that hasn't had non-whites working there. And if I turn around to the manager and said, look, I can't work here because they're non-whites, I won't be able to work. So therefore, I will break the other law. Do you see what I mean?
Right, right.
And what he's trying to say is that you've got to advertise a TV repair business, but if you get called to the house of someone who's not the same race as you, then you're a hypocrite by taking their business.
Well,
I mean, it's nonsense.
When you're in the service business especially, you have not much control over that, because I had a wide clientele because I was good at what I did, and I didn't discriminate against them when they asked me to do work for them. I would turn that argument around. I mean, I did not discriminate against anybody that wanted service, and I never raised my prices with you know, rich people and cheated poor people or anything. I believe in if you're living in an area where a lot different races, if people are treating you decently, you should treat them decently. I'm not the kind of racist that goes around, you know, I hate everybody that's not white. I mean, you know, If anything, I would have had a problem with the rich people in the area around there. I dislike them more than the poor people or the non-whites. But people call you on the phone, and I hear you're good at television service, and I need service. Well, here, I go out there and do it. No, you're right. You couldn't survive today in either England, the United States, or even Europe by not having any non-white customers.
And, yeah, it's, I mean, he also goes on to say, he makes these bizarre statements on the voiceover, and I keep bringing up the voiceovers, folks, because Tom was never aware of the voiceover. That's done, you know, at the end when they put all that together, so he's not doing the voiceover as it happens. And this is a statement that he made. I wrote it down word for word. And I've just put, Theroux makes bizarre statements unrelated to what is being filmed at the time. You're getting out of a car with him somewhere. You've been driving. And he just, you get this on the voiceover. This is what he says. As abhorrent as his, Tom's, views were, I found it had to take Tom totally seriously. He seemed to like to be seen as a dangerous force, but was all the while enjoying the fruits of a multiracial democracy. I'll repeat that because I stuttered on there. As abhorrent as Tom's views were, I found that I couldn't take Tom totally seriously. He seemed to like to be seen as a dangerous figure, but was all the while enjoying the fruits of a multiracial democracy. Now, what? I don't get where he's coming from. Is he trying to say that because you had a non-white customer that you're benefiting from a multiracial democracy? Is he trying to say that if we lived in a pure white racial nation that you wouldn't have customers for your business? I mean, it's pathetic, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. They can turn everything around, and they do it all the time, turn it upside down, and the problem is we don't have control of any of the press. We don't own big newspapers or anything like that, and they can say whatever they want and manipulate it way they want. Well, you live in a race mixed country, and you're trying to make a living. You have to make a living. I back in the '60s, for about 3 years, I worked for a couple of Jews up in Los Angeles who ran their service department. Well, I got to tell you, those two Jews treated me fine. I'm not going to lie and say they treated me bad or they were bad people, because they weren't. So, I mean, I look at the overall situation, and usually my problem is with the people at the top, not the people in between.
Yeah, I think I've actually worked. There's been a couple of Jewish managers, and they were both quite encouraging. But of course, since my beliefs where I am now, what they did was they recognised I was, what's the word, best way to describe it? They were less controlled. They kind of satisfied themselves that, you know, this guy can, if we give this guy a long leash and get him to run with it, he's quite creative, he'll do a good job. And I did on both occasions. And one of them, even at one point, he said, look, I'll go to, because I was working for an agency, he said, I'm going to go to my manager and try and get you some more money. And he got me an extra couple of pounds an hour and stuff, and it was something that he didn't have to do. But you see, of course, if I'm doing good work for them, then they're going to get praise from their superiors, etc., etc. And I agree with you. I don't think it's necessary to say that every single association is have to lie about it, just in order to justify your position of living in a pure white racial society. It doesn't matter if you've had some good experiences with non-whites. I say to people that, you know, if you think getting your own white racial society is the answer, you wait until you have to deal with all the garbage in it.
You know, right.
You just need to put some of these things like the Jeremy Kyle show and stuff like that. And the trash, the garbage we've got in our own race is a disgrace, quite frankly. But that doesn't mean that we pick out the best of other races and try and live in that sort of society, because we know that a multiracial society does not work. It means that once we get our own racial society, we clean house then amongst those people, and we have decent laws, and if people don't want to obey them, then they're properly punished until they do.
Sure, I agree. Our biggest problem is our own race. It always has been. Every place where the whites lose, it's because they're doing it to themselves or allowing other people to manipulate them. Like I said before, if like in the movie, you got to let the vampire in the door. He doesn't have any power to come in unless you open the door for the vampire. You know?
Well, that reminds me, the bit out of the... I didn't actually write this down, but when you were heading off to... Was it when you were heading off to... No. This is a bit, actually, that they cut out. I'll get into that now. And you had a barbecue round at your house, and you'll remember that bit. And Malpaisy turned up, and he brought a crucifix to ward Theroux away with.
Yeah.
And he got it off a film set. He goes, Louis, look. And he's like putting... And, of course, you know, you use a crucifix to ward away a vampire, and that's what he was doing. And Theroux was, like, a bit perplexed, and he used that a couple of times. And one thing I want to say here is there's a key point at the end of the documentary. This is in the cut and the uncut version, where Theroux keeps trying to show... your war newspaper to Malpaisy and trying to justify cartoons which are, you know, criticising a white and black, a white man and a black man and a white girl dating, and it's got an image of them. And
yeah, those are rough cartoons. Those are very rough cartoons, and we meant them to be.
but they're true, aren't they? I mean,
yeah, sure.
I find it a personal insult. When I kid you not, where I live, Tom, I lived in Devon, and basically the only non-white people there were the people that owned the Indian restaurant and the people that owned the Chinese restaurant. It was by the coast, south coast of England, and that was where I wrote a couple of books. And then I came back and I went to London, where I am now, in a deprived area, and I saw so many white women with black babies. I used to look at the strollers that they were putting to see, and I kid you not, I worked out over like a 2-week period, on average it was about 8 in 10 of these white women are pushing half-breed babies. And that is a couple of years, when did I come here? 2012, so that's 4 years ago. So this documentary was 9 years before that. And so he says, well, what's the problem with a black man and a white woman getting together? Well, I can show you the problem now, Louis.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But the key point with that is Malpaisy says, no, Louis keeps saying, do you think that this is the truth? And he just looks at Louis and he says, Tom Metzger always tells the truth. Louis just doesn't say, doesn't look at him, he doesn't answer him, he doesn't challenge it. And this is something I want to bring up here, because you and I, we've got different opinions on issues.
Sure.
But I believe that you... I do not question your honesty at all. From what I know of you, I've not had any reason to question that, and I know that I'm always going to get honest answers. It's not going to be things that I would necessarily agree with or listeners would, but I really, as a person, I feel that I can trust what you say. I just don't see you lying to me at all on the issues that we've discussed. You know, there could be, you've done your, say for example, we won't go into it, but I'm identity, you're not, but you've done different research than me, and I'm kind of happy with the research I've done. You're happy with the research you've done. Doesn't make you a liar, or doesn't make me a liar.
Well, some of my best friends have been identity down through the years, and some of the top leaders, of course, were my very close friends. And even after I quit being a Christian, we were still in contact, still working together, and still, you know, like with Richard Butler, we were good friends. And, I mean, I was at his trial and supported him and everything else. And so I didn't, just because they changed my view on religion, didn't change my view on our comradeship.
No, that's it. And now I'm going to go through the scenes. Now, I don't know whether to read these through. Let's see how we go, but I'm just going to tell you the scenes that were cut out of the DVD version. As I said, it was cut down from 80 minutes to 60 minutes, so we've lost a quarter. The scene where Louis asks you and Mary, while you're sat outside, if he could stay the night in your home, and you refuse, that's been cut out.
Right.
But part of the next scene... where you're standing by Malpaisy's swimming pool, and Malpaisy actually offers to let him stay at his house, that was also cut out.
Mm-hmm.
So he clearly didn't want people to see that. You know, he obviously thought afterwards it just looked ridiculous. I mean, why is it that if I had someone over here, if they were short of money, you know, I'd let them stay. Well, I live in a one-bedroom apartment, Tom, but there's a sofa here, and it actually came, you know, it's part of the furnishings when I moved in, and it's actually a sofa bed, so I'd let someone stay on there, but I'd prefer it if they stayed in their own place, because, you know, you get up, you walk around in the morning, and do you know what I mean? You don't.
I find it's a very bad mistake to leave people into your house, strangers, especially the press, because they have, you know, they have said some bad things about me and all that, and criticized my house and everything. So out of that, all of that, I don't never allow press in my home anymore. Never. I'll meet them at a restaurant or in a park or something like that, but I will never allow the press, and I will never allow someone who I don't know really, really well into my home, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, these people, they can be rifling through your things and all sorts. I mean, even if you put them in a room somewhere, the chances are they'll be going through what they can in that room and finding anything. And this guy was such an ambush merchant, as I keep saying. I mean, there's a part where you offer Theroux a popsicle, and he asks where Mary is, and you say she's fled the scene, saying, I can't take this anymore. Now, you said, oh, that was a joke, but it made me wonder, was it a joke or not?
No, it wasn't a joke. She couldn't stand him.
Yeah, and that's what I thought watching it. And you said it in a joking manner, and I put here, I think the viewers could pick up that she was uncomfortable in Theroux's presence, as I mentioned before.
Right.
Now, we move on to the barbecue at your house. That's been cut out completely. The interesting thing here is where you let Theroux cook burgers, and you say, I got those pork specially for you to check you out. Theroux replies, they're turkey, and you say, ha ha ha, you read the label. Theroux then says, do you care if I'm Jewish? Let me get the right page, sorry, that's it. Do you care if I'm Jewish? You say, not for this, no, you're doing your job. So again, we've got a second reference in the show where he brings up, does someone care if they're Jewish or not?
Right.
The other bits that have been cut out, the scene at your daughter Lynn's house, that's been completely cut out, when she discusses that she ran, I think, the Aryan Women's League, and then that amalgamated with war.
Right.
Okay. And then the scene in John Malpaise's house before you all go to Mexico, because I think he got him first and then picked you up, that's been cut out. And the scene where I commented on when he accused you of inconsistency, but he meant hypocrisy, the bit where he calls you a hypocrite in the car, That's been cut out. They left the inconsistency part. So obviously they'd had some sort of feedback, but people were saying, no, you know, the viewers thought he was being unfair to you there. So that's my view anyway.
Yeah.
And he says, I think you are a hypocrite. You reply, I know who I am. I don't need Louis Theroux to quantify who I am. And finally, the scene at John Malpaise's house where Theroux accuses Malpaise of having a sense of guilt over the racist cartoons. We just went through that, but where he actually accuses him of having a sense of guilt over it, that's been cut out completely, and Malpaise denied he had any guilt of it overall. So I've covered everything that I had, you know, written down. I hope it's interesting as well to see what, from your perspective, what they cut out, Tom.
No, it is interesting. But what I'd really like to see is the good stuff that's on the cutting room floor.
Can you run through that, things that you remember?
Well,
it's got another 7 minutes left, but if we can take it to another show.
I can't really, on the spur of the moment, think about too much of it because, this went on for days. They were around for 2 or 3 days, they were shooting all the time.
Non-stop filming, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. We went downtown and walked around. We did all this stuff. We went into businesses. Louis followed Mary into a beauty parlor, and and the gal chased him out and stuff. There's a lot of funny stuff too in this thing, but he got to see that around town I was a very popular guy. I had friends all over town, and I talked to black people, talked to Mexicans, I talked to all of them. You see, people get all mixed up on this thing. I want to see an all-white nation, but I'm not in the idea to just start going down the street shooting non-white people and all that kind of stuff. I think we have to negotiate this thing. And in the meantime, we're living in the same community. You just can't exist going around having fist fights and shootouts with everybody you run into.
Absolutely agree. And, this has always been the... I mean, I had this discussion actually on a show I recorded before this one, only yesterday, another show I pre-recorded, because it makes me feel uncomfortable. Say, for example, someone... went out and, did something to a few Jews, and it was similar to the, so-called McVeigh case, that he had a copy of the Turner Diaries in his car on the way home, and that was all looked like a frame-up anyway.
Well, incidentally, McVeigh was not a racist. He had a Filipino girlfriend, and his buddy that he worked with had Philippine girlfriends. They were not racist. I mean, they can... try to pin that on them, but they're not being accurate. I mean, a racist does not have a Filipino girlfriend.
Exactly. That is hypocrisy. But I mean, from my point of view, if someone was found to have committed a crime against, Jews, for example, they got arrested and what have you, and they were somehow, they've read my book or something like that. Yeah. I wouldn't be proud of that. I wouldn't be saying, I inspired that. I'd be thinking this guy is now what this guy's done. I wouldn't have any sympathy for the Jews, but I would say that this guy, he's ruined his life. He's ruined the life of all those close to him.
Right.
If he's got parents that are still alive, if he's got children that are depending on him, a wife, what have you, their relationship is over.
Well, that's my point. Non-productive violence is a waste, and it's a waste of good men going to prison for life and all that time. It's not. I believe that violence is needed in some cases, but not at the lower levels. I mean, I believe like the anarchists did back at the turn of the last century. They went after the top. They didn't mess around with the bottom. I think going after hapless people on the street, shooting them and stuff like that is a waste of time and a waste of money, and it's not effective. Even if you want it, even if you agreed with it, it's not effective. That's not the way armies run,
Yeah, and I mean, this is what I like about what you say. The right, and I'm guilty of this. I've done work on Adolf Hitler, and I've read bits of Mein Kampf that I liked and what have you. But when you actually bring it down to, you're completely anti-war, and people just see it as, a few million people here, they attack a few million people there, and, if we do that, and we'll win. And they never think of the human cost. They never think that there's a woman with a couple of young children and a man at home, that man has to go and kill a load of people. He ends up dying himself, so those children get raised without a father.
Or he comes back to his country all screwed up psychologically and maybe
arms and legs missing and
yeah, all of that stuff. The reverberations from all that for years and decades after the war. I mean, our Vietnam vets are still suffering. Our Korean vets are still suffering. And if you can find some World War II vets, they're still suffering. So it goes on and on. You don't win anything. You just cause a lot of pain. And, like we dropped the atomic bombs on Japan, and Japan was trying to surrender for weeks before that happened so that Truman could experiment with the atomic bombs. I mean, I'm talking about how can you take... even a black criminal that's maybe shot his buddy, put him in jail forever, when these guys are killing thousands and millions of people, and we call them heroes, the fathers of our country. It just don't make sense.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing that people have got to think about. They look at things like some sort of computer game where you're just shooting at, you know, inanimate things, but these are people's lives. Now, you know, from my point of view, I share Tom's ideal in living in a white racial society. But I've said before that if the blacks can go back to Africa and be prosperous over there, or if they can go back to Africa and starve, I've got no interest either way. If they can be prosperous, let them be prosperous. So as they're not, as long as they're not a threat to us. Obviously, because of what they've been doing in our country, I don't have any compassion for whether they do or they don't, because I think that they've been making us suffer.
And what they've been allowed to do, this was all the red carpet was put down by white people. It was the white people and the white Jews who allow them to get away with all this stuff. And immediately when anybody tries to say, well, we're not jumping on all blacks, but we're, these guys that are causing all this trouble are going to get it. They all cry and moan about it, you know. It doesn't even make sense, you know.
No, I understand. And we've come to the end of our time. Is there anything that you want to say quickly before we wrap up?
No, that's about it for today. I've enjoyed the conversation, and however, I hate to think of Louis Theroux. It makes me sick when I think of that guy.
Well, you know, just looking at the guy, he's got that grin. He's got, I mean, I say I liked him when I was younger because it was all, you see, this is what I thought youth was all about. I thought it was all about pushing social norms and things like that. That's how they corrupt our youth, but it isn't.
Well, so I did enjoy some of it. When he went to that brothel in Las Vegas, Nevada,
yeah.
I liked that. That was funny. And
that's on the same disc as your one. It's in the collection.
Yeah, a couple of other places he went, I enjoyed that. Overall, he's just a snake in the grass.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, well, thanks so much, Tom. I mean, it was great having you on today. I know that we'll be doing some more shows together. So I just want to thank everybody for listening as well, and I'll be back with you all soon. Bye for now.
Thanks, Andy.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on the Eurofolk Radio Network. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.